Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Coming up in just a couple of minutes, I have three words that I believe ought to get dog fans pretty excited today. I'll tell you about this coming up when we get to that point. Before that, though, Lane Kiffin, Florida Atlantic coach, generally I sort of find to be pretty entertaining. I think he's a really good play caller. I think he's a better play caller for Alabama than Brian Daboll was or currently is. I typically don't have that big of a problem with Lane Kiffin. But I have a big problem with what Kiffin said about Georgia quarterback Jake Fromm. Kiffin was on Dan Patrick yesterday. Most of the interview was about Tua Tagovailoa. And frankly, we on SEC Country Live yesterday, we played some pretty weird audio of Kiffin seeming to kind of wade into the Tua was going to transfer if he didn't play. Now Hurts may transfer. It was very unbecoming of a head coach. It almost sort of veered in the direction of tampering. It was a weird thing. I was critical of that on SEC Country Live yesterday, but y'all don't care about that. That's the Alabama quarterbacks. But what Kiffin said about Jake Fromm, I do think you care about, and I think it's going to probably irritate you. It irritated me. I play it not to troll you, but to, I think, come up with a consensus of something we can kind of all agree on here going forward when it comes to a Jake Fromm. Fromm, as you know, was a committed player for Alabama 2017 class. First offer, though, for Kirby Smart as the Georgia coach was Fromm. And shortly upon receiving that offer, Fromm flipped his commitment from Alabama to Georgia. Well, Kiffin says that's okay because Alabama never really wanted him as much anyway, at least compared to Tua Tagovailoa. Here is Lane Kiffin kind of explaining why, and he takes a bit of a jab at Fromm along the way. Here's Lane Kiffin.
Obviously, that was never released publicly. Now that I'm not there, I can tell you that story. Now, we thought Fromm was great, went and watched him practice. This guy was an unbelievable leader, great baseball player, you know, great command of the team in practice. You know, knew this guy was going to be really, really special. But just when you just watch Tua's talent, you know, this was off the charts unique. Fromm is a great leader. Fromm is very talented, but Jake Fromm's not a first-round draft pick. You know, that's not, you know, you don't watch him and say, okay, that guy's going to be a first-round draft pick. You watch him, that guy's a great college quarterback. If he has the right surrounding cast also, which he does have, you know, phenomenal cast around him. You know, Tua's got a higher ceiling.
So that's Lane Kiffin talking about Jake Fromm in comparison to Tua Tagovailoa. And the reason why I play that's really twofold. First of all, because I want to really put out there and for everybody to see what I think is the single most irritating thing about Alabama. And Georgia fans obviously going to have to wait for a while here, December, before, as one of our commenters mentioned yesterday, what might be Revenge Tour 2.0, getting revenge against Alabama in the SEC Championship game next year for what happened in the National Championship game here at the end of the 2017 season. But along the way, Georgia and Alabama are going to butt heads a few times. They're going to do it in recruiting here and there. And the most irritating thing to me about Alabama is when Alabama doesn't get a player, there are these leaks that seem to bubble up of, well, that's okay, we didn't want that guy anyway for this reason, that reason, the third reason, whatever. And this almost seems like Lane Kiffin, maybe even unwittingly, sort of doing the bidding of Alabama. Alabama didn't get Jake Fromm, that's okay, we wanted the other guy. And it seems somewhat timely, of course, because Tua Tagovailoa did just lead Alabama to the national championship game win over Jake Fromm's Georgia team. But let's face it here, and this is the real reason to sort of bring this up. What Tua did, he did over the course of two quarters in an overtime. What Jake Fromm did, he did over the course of a season, a full season, by the way. And I have no problem telling you, and I have no hesitation in my voice when I say this, if you give me a choice of one of the two quarterbacks, I am more than fine with the guy that Georgia's got. I'm not trading Jake Fromm for Tua Tagovailoa, and I say that as a guy that's really impressed with Tua. I think Tua can have a really good career at Alabama. We saw some examples of that on Monday. But I am more than fine with Jake Fromm. And I think there is a very good chance that Jake Fromm ends up being the superior quarterback. In fact, I'm pretty sure that he probably will be based on what I've seen from a larger preponderance of evidence, a full season of his work compared to a brief window into a Tua's work. And by the way, I'm not necessarily the only one who feels this way. Take a perusal here of some of the way too early top 25s that are on the internet right now. When the sports writers kind of sort of imagine what next year's real top 25 might look like. Well, early in January, Georgia is looked upon very favorably. Jake Fromm, a big reason why on all of that. Georgia's ranked number one in SI's way too early top 25 over Alabama, by the way, in Tua Tagovailoa. Fromm, a big reason for that. Georgia's number 3 in the CBS poll, number 5 in the ESPN poll. Now, number 3, number 5 is not where Georgia wants to be next season. I would dare say that may not be quite good enough for some Georgia fans, but it just goes to show you that Jake Fromm as a quarterback is here to stay, and this notion that Lane Kiffin dismisses him as definitely not going to be a first-round quarterback or definitely inferior from a skill set to Tua Tagovailoa, I simply don't believe that's true. And I think the story of Jake Fromm is far from written, and 2018 is likely to be even better for him than 2017 was. And I also saw where one of the online sports books, I forget the name of it, but one of the online sports books already has its 2018 Heisman odds out. And right now, Jake Fromm is the leading candidate for the Heisman Trophy, at least according to this online sports book who put out some betting odds on this. Far higher than Tua Tagovailoa, far higher than Jalen Hurts, who's also mentioned. Fromm is the top of the list right now with 10-1 odds to win the Heisman. Now, I'm not telling you that Fromm's going to win the Heisman. I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is, in this battle that we expect to go on for the next couple of years between Georgia and Alabama, I think Georgia's got the right quarterback to get it done. I think Fromm, and by the way, also probably Justin Fields, when he gets his chance to play maybe in a couple of years, I think Georgia's more than fine the quarterback position. Tua's going to get all the hype, and maybe justifiably so, for what came off the national championship game on Monday. This is not probably the only time these two teams are going to play here in the years ahead. And I expect Fromm to have more than his share of success against Alabama before it's all said and done. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Good to have you with us here on the program today. We're glad you are here. We're going to have a lot of fun with you, whether you're watching us on video at 10 a.m. on the Dog Nation Facebook page, listening to us on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. By the way, had a chance to catch up with the morning show this morning on 960 The Ref. Good to be with Sam Franco, Logan Booker there on the morning show this morning on 960 The Ref. I always love being on the radio there at noon. I appreciate those of you in the Athens area who listen to the show while you're going to lunch, something like that. Just really nice to be a part of your day there in the Classic City. And, of course, if you're not in Athens, you want to listen to the audio version of the show. We make it easy for you. It's our podcast. It is found any time of the day or night, anywhere in the world, on demand. Of course, we post the show at dognation.com, or as I like to say, the world-famous dognation.com, iTunes, SoundCloud. We try to be out there for you. I will tell you, go ahead and be making your plans for this upcoming Tuesday. We have a great Marlowe's broadcast coming up. We get back to our countdown to signing day events, Jeff Sintel and me. I believe we're going to be at the Marlowe's in Buford. I hope that's right. I'll get this clarified. We'll be ready to go on that. But Marlowe's in Buford coming up this Tuesday. Going to be a lot of fun there. Also, I understand that the folks from Tailgate Apparel are going to be hanging out with us there that day as well. They're going to be bringing a nice display of Tailgate Apparel stuff for you to check out and peruse. So that's going to be a lot of fun. 6 to 8 p.m. Marlowe's in Buford coming up this upcoming Tuesday. We've also had some really, really nice, interesting special guests the last few times we've done one of these countdown to signing day events. So we're looking forward to Marlowe's and Buford coming up on Tuesday on that front. But that's that for now. Obviously, let me turn my attention back to the matter at hand here and what I said a moment ago. I believe that, you know, in a week when some Georgia fans probably need a little bit of a pick-me-up, on a week when some Georgia fans probably need a little bit of a good news, I believe there are three words today that I think ought to get Georgia fans feeling pretty good about the week to come, the next month, and frankly, maybe even the next year and beyond that. And I know this may sound a bit corny, and I apologize if it comes across that way because, well, let's face it, I'm probably also at times a bit of a corny guy, but I don't intend to be in this respect. I intend for you to take this seriously. The three words that I think ought to make Georgia fans feel pretty good are three words that we've heard Kirby Smart use a whole bunch. They're simply this, one of his famous catchphrases: attack the day. Because the reason why I think that's appropriate here today is because I have no doubt on this Wednesday, final day of the dead period, you know, the open recruiting period begins again, I think, tomorrow. I have no doubt that coming off the heels of the national championship game and the bitter, disappointing loss that was, I have no doubt that Kirby Smart dusted himself off pretty quick, met with his assistants and the staff that he employs there at the University of Georgia, and he looked those guys in the eye and said, hey, it's time to get back to work. It's time to make sure that the next time this happens, it works out differently for the Georgia Bulldogs, with Georgia on top in the national championship game when it's all said and done. And attack the day is not just some, you know, catchphrase that looks good on T-shirts or sounds good when it blares over the PA system at Sanford Stadium, but it really is the approach that Georgia's going to take here towards the final run-up towards recruiting. I mean, I think we saw some examples of that for Georgia coming off the Rose Bowl. I had a chance to hear from some folks pretty close to the program about, you know, just how focused and dedicated Georgia was in the sort of aftermath of that game against Oklahoma. My understanding is that Kirby Smart made it known that there would be time for celebrating what happened in that Rose Bowl. It would be a game worth remembering sometime in the future. But for now, the focus was getting back to Georgia and getting focused on Alabama. And even though the Dogs lost, the Crimson Tide, there's no doubt that the transition for Georgia worked out pretty well that week. And I'm almost 1,000% sure that the same kind of transitions happen here. There'll be time to think about what went wrong against Alabama sometime later on over a lunch conversation, a dinner conversation, whatever. But for now, it's time to focus in on beating Alabama where it really matters and where it can be done right now in recruiting. And by the way, one of those guys is Tyson Campbell, the five-star cornerback who's got official visit coming up to Georgia, official visit coming up to Alabama. When Jeff Sintel was on Dog Nation Daily yesterday, he talked about Georgia's big opportunity here with Campbell. Attack the day, something that Georgia's going to do in recruiting here for the next few weeks. The first big opportunity to do that may be with Campbell. Here's what Jeff Sintel said about Tyson yesterday.
Well, I tell you, it's going to come fast and furious for Georgia fans, because if you want an elixir to get this misery out of your stomach, well, it's coming on January the 12th. That's when Tyson Campbell, the prospect that I deem to be the biggest recruiting target on the board for Georgia. No matter what happened last night, Tyson Campbell was still the biggest number one remaining target. Five-star corner, 6'2½", 180, 185. Tyson Campbell, if he was on that field last night, he would have been one of the five fastest players on the field by anyone's measure. He's that new prototype cornerback that Kirby and Mel Tucker definitely want to add to their defense. He's visiting his official visit on January the 12th. His next official visit will be to Alabama on January the 19th. I think those are really his two schools. I think if he sees what he wants out of one of those two programs, that is where he will end up. But Georgia is definitely in that thing with Tyson Campbell.
So imagine this. You know, Georgia fans want their revenge against Alabama. They want some sort of rematch against the Tide. On the field, they may have to wait for a while, but Tyson Campbell's a five-star cornerback. And right now, as Jeff said, he's only got two official visits scheduled. One of them is to Georgia. One of them is to Alabama. And Georgia, who wants to sort of maintain its focus and its edge, finish this 2018 recruiting cycle strong, Tyson Campbell this weekend gives you a great opportunity to do that. And I think that Georgia fans ought to be celebrating this recruiting win. If Georgia could get it, I believe you ought to celebrate Campbell as much as you'd celebrate anybody else for this 2018 class. I think it's a monstrous pickup, and I love the way that Jeff said that. It would be true for Campbell no matter how the result would have unfolded for the national championship game, but it probably, if we're going to be honest here, and on Dog Nation Daily we do try to be, if we're going to be honest, the need for a five-star cornerback seems even greater after you watch the way the final moments of that national championship game against Alabama unfold. Well, what would be sweeter than taking one from Alabama? Georgia's had some recruiting success against the Tide lately. And, yeah, you know, Alabama always kinds of finds a way to do what Lane Kiffin did at the top of our show, which is sort of make it seem like Alabama didn't really lose and it got all the players that it wanted, and the players that it didn't get, it didn't really want them to begin with. And they may try to spin the Tyson Campbell thing one way or another also. But I think we know the truth here. Two official visits coming up. If Georgia could beat out Campbell, and it's no guarantee that it will, but if it could, or I should say if it could beat out Alabama for Campbell, be a monstrous, monstrous win. But as Jeff Sintel told us yesterday, when it comes to those final remaining spots for Georgia, however many there might be based on public commitments that haven't signed and scholarship spots that are still open, Tyson Campbell not the only big name here and not the only showdown with Alabama. A chance for Georgia to attack the day with another name that Crimson Tide fans are also hoping for. Here's a little more from Jeff.
I think Taylor Stewart, who may be the only person in high school football on the recruiting world that's faster than Tyson Campbell, just as big out of San Diego, the same high school which produced Reggie Bush. He's visiting on January the 26th. Georgia has 20 signees. They have three public commitments. I don't foresee all three of those guys remaining in the class. I think Quay Walker even put it to me pretty accurately when he said he feels like Georgia has two remaining spots. That's what he's been told in the class of 2018. Do the math. if Georgia loses only one of those guys, might be a defensive back, especially if they get Tyson Campbell. Then Tyson Campbell and Clay Walker could be the close to this recruiting class. Or it could be Tyson Campbell and Isaac Taylor Stewart.
What Jeff Sintel does not mention there is Tommy Bush, the wide receiver, who many have thought that Georgia's kind of in the mix for, you know, coming off the Elijah Moore decommit, but going towards Ole Miss there. So kind of an interesting final run-up towards signing day with a final few names. The possibility that Georgia could get 2 5-star cornerbacks like Isaac Taylor Stewart, Tyson Campbell. You also got to be careful here, and Jeff mentioned this yesterday, you know, putting too many eggs in the Taylor Stewart basket, given the fact that he hasn't visited Georgia at all yet. That's certainly an issue to deal with. But then you sort of cycle back around to Quay Walker, who's currently an Alabama commit, but somebody that Georgia's chasing for hard in the final stages. And the thought is, with Jeremy Pruitt now at Tennessee, one of the pulls for Walker to Tuscaloosa, maybe no longer there, which gives Georgia an opportunity. So, yeah, attack the day. Plenty of opportunities for Georgia to do that when it comes to recruiting, and plenty of big names still out there. It's going to be a fun race towards the month of February and the close of the 2018 recruiting cycle. Good to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with my good buddy Mike Johnson right now. Let me say hello to my partner from AT&T SEC Country Live, Mike Johnson. Always good to have him here on the program. And, you know, Mike, I want to welcome you in this way. You know, one of the things that we do a lot is look at your past as a player to maybe explain what's going on in college football right now. And with Georgia in particular, you were part of a 2008 team that had a disappointing loss. You lost to Florida in the SEC championship. That team went on to win the national championship. The Gators team that beat you in the SEC championship. The following year, you guys got it done. You hoisted the national championship trophy. Put that scenario in place here for Georgia. How well positioned do you think Georgia might be to do what your Alabama team did over the course of 2008 and 2009, which is take the next step forward after a disappointing loss to end the 2008 season?
Yeah, I think they're almost in a couple of ways better positioned to do something like that. I think when you look at the depth we had on that 2008 team, obviously the 2008 signing class for Alabama in a lot of ways is what sent that program over the top. Likes of Julio Jones, Mark Ingram, Marcel Darius, a bunch of those guys that came in, and that depth started building. And, you know, you saw the next year, well, listen, we lost two All-American offensive linemen, one being the Outland Trophy winner off that 2008 team. Everybody thought we'd take a step back. But the recruiting that Nick Saban had done behind a lot of those guys allowed us to move forward the next year and not miss a beat. You know, we were replacing our quarterback. We were replacing our running back. We were replacing three offensive linemen. We were replacing a lot of great talent from that 2008 team. But like I said, never missed a beat. Julio Jones became a bigger weapon in 2009. You know, we had a Greg McElroy came into his own in that 2009 season. Mark Ingram won the Heisman Trophy in 2009. So there was definitely a lot of buildup on that 2008 team, a lot of people that were playing with a lot of probably ahead of where their talent base really was. And I thought that in 2009, everybody started to turn the corner. A lot of that was because of the recruiting class that Nick Saban was able to bring in 08.
Yeah, and, you know, look, when you look at the situation that you face, one of the things I'm always kind of fascinated is the role that motivation plays in all of this. And ultimately, I think games are decided by the team with the better players, I think virtually always. But I think there's also a role that motivation kind of goes into on this. I mean, how much did Scott Cochran, Saban, the other coaches, how much did they call upon the, hey, you know, y'all were, you know, right there against Florida, and Florida was better than you in that SEC championship game. Of course, that team had Tim Tebow, and that was a truly terrific football team. But how much did that sort of, you know, a few points, few yards short against Florida kind of factor into the motivational story over the course of the buildup to the 2009 year? Was it something that y'all recalled, or was, for the most part, that ignored?
Listen, I will go ahead and tell you right now what Kirby Smart is doing. He's getting posters printed. He's getting videos made. It will be all over the place at Georgia's facility. Go ahead and get ready for it. Anybody that gets a chance to step in that locker room or be around that team, they are going to be reminded on a daily basis of what happened in that championship game Monday night. And it's something that those players will hate. They will hate it all offseason. They will look at that poster every day. It will remind them to go back to work. I can't tell you. I mean, the losses from the 2007 season, we lost to Louisiana Monroe. That was built into a poster that was put on every TV in the weight room. The loss from that 2008 season to Tim Tebow, we had pictures of Tim Tebow hoisting the crystal ball, you know, hoisting the national championship trophy with Urban Meyer. They were made into basically billboards. It was used as a motivational tactic throughout that entire offseason, and it was forced upon us. We had to look at it. We listened to Gators fight songs. We listened to broadcasts of the game as we're working out in the weight room. It was what Scott Cochran used to really hammer the message home that you cannot let a day go by. And I know that Georgia uses that saying, attack the day. Cannot let a day go by without putting the most effort in possible. And in the end, you'll be able to achieve your goals.
So you obviously watched the game closely on Monday. Those of us who are know you well and people who watch us and listen to us each and every day know where you come from on this. You played for Alabama. You were no doubt happy for your team on Monday. But when you look at the Georgia side of things, when you look at what Georgia may be missing, those final sort of, you know, personnel pieces or those final missing pieces that can make Georgia be what Alabama has been, I mean, for you, kind of what comes to mind on that?
Well, I look at the guard positions. I look at the interior offensive line. As great as Lamont Galliard, as great as Isaiah Wynn seemingly played this year, you're going to establish a new ceiling. I think the Georgia fans can look forward to establishing a new ceiling with what you're going to see on the interiors, really, and in the trenches of this offensive line and defensive line. You've had good players. I mean, Lord knows. I mean, I played against the likes of Geno Atkins and some of the other guys Georgia has had on the defensive side of the ball. But there's going to be a new ceiling. There will be, instead of like really good four-star players, all of a sudden those guys become really good five-star players, guys that have developed, guys that have explosive hips, guys that, you know, like Jamari Sawyer, that you think could be literally a top 15 pick, you know, in a draft here in a few years, if they play to the top of their level. So a new high will be coming to certain positions at Georgia. And I think that, you know, you can sit there and break it down. Obviously, they had an incredible year, so I don't think you change a lot or point in one direction and say, man, they need to change this or change that. Looking in the interior, looking in the front seven, looking at the ability on the back end and the secondary, there will just be a new high established at some of those positions, and you will understand, like, you know, a guy like you, B.A., that understands recruiting, how big of a deal it is when you sign a number one class like they have this year.
So, you're right. When I look at the Alabama profile, too, it's kind of – in one respect, it does seem somewhat daunting, I will admit this, because I would say, hey, what are Georgia's championship needs? I think they need, you know, more elite wide receivers. They are probably coming in 2019. More elite defensive backs, I think they're coming in 2018. And yet against Alabama, you also learn that you can't ever stop recruiting these big-time linemen. Because look at the two guys for Alabama's defense that really had the biggest impact in the game Monday. I would say Raekwon Davis was one. I would say Deshaun Hands another. And in Hands' case in particular, that's a guy that some Alabama fans may have said, you know, hey, has he fully lived up to the hype coming into this season? Up until now, maybe he kind of hasn't. You could speak to that better than I could. I think some Alabama fans might say that. And yet, you know, he's knocking down balls on Monday night. He's in the backfield a lot on Monday. He's occupying more than one blocker probably in some instances. And it just goes to show you that, you know, in those games against Alabama, no matter how much you want to put the focus sometimes other position groups, it is still that work in the interior line, both offensively and defensively, that also ultimately decides these games.
Yeah, and that's what I mean when I talk about establishing a new ceiling. You see defensive linemen, and Georgia has a really quality defensive front. You know, you see guys soaking up double teams, and you see guys that are able to take on blockers at the point of attack and slide off and make a tackle. Well, you know, all of a sudden you go from what's, you know, a four-star talent level in college to a five-star talent level, and then all of a sudden, you know, instead of just soaking up the double teams, they're splitting the double teams. They're making tackles for loss. They're making sacks. They're affecting the passers. They're getting their hands up in the pass rush. It's not like what you had before wasn't good, but what you have coming next is going to be great. And I think in a lot of ways that makes the difference. I think that these two teams for the next few years are going to be incredibly equally matched. I think that obviously a lot of people saw Alabama's freshman come on the field in that second half. Georgia's got the same thing coming right behind them. So I think that when it comes down to it in the next couple of years, if they see each other, a lot about you know, coach planning, a lot about you know, who really wants it in the trenches, a lot about wherever they're playing. It's going to be a great matchup for years to come because of the recruiting bases that both teams have built.
So one of the things, if Kirby Smart was sitting here and we were all talking about this stuff together, one of the things that he would say is that, you know, Georgia's going to replace leaders. He would say that Chubb and Michelle were more than just good players. They were true leaders. The same thing for, like, Carter and Bellamy, the senior outside linebackers. I think Roquan Smith, in addition to being the Buckus Award winner, was also a bit of a leader for Georgia. What is the process like of when new leaders emerge? Now, my guess is, even though I haven't been in these kind of situations, it's the weight room stuff this time of year where that stuff probably kind of starts to kind of bubble up here. Is that kind of how it goes? The person who's attacking the training regimen the hardest? I mean, how do you emerge as a leader when that leadership responsibility has really belonged to somebody else on the previous year's team?
Yeah, listen, it's not going to be something that happens overnight. I think that it takes really, you know, some of the offseason. I think that Kirby Smart will attack this the same way that Nick Saban did, where you know, some teams, they go in the offseason and sometime before the year, they name their captains for the year. Hey, we want these guys going out in the coin toss this year. These are our captains. These are our leaders. Well, what that does is that tends to excuse everybody else that's not named the captain. They, you know, all of a sudden, all these seniors start to look away and say, you know what, that's not my problem. I'm not a captain. So I think at Alabama, this is what they do, and I'm sure Kirby Smart will do the same thing. You wait until the end of the year. You establish a leadership council. You get one guy from each meeting room, one defensive lineman, one linebacker, maybe a couple of running backs, maybe a couple of guys in that program that you feel are moving in the right direction, and allow them to get in front of the team. Allow them to take control throughout the offseason. Allow them to be in on the character meetings. Allow them to kind of run things academically. And those guys will emerge. And I think that you'll see, you know, I think some of these guys will be hesitant. I was hesitant. I didn't want to replace the guys in front of me that were team captains, but in the end, I realized, you know what, this is my team too, and you know, I need to have a voice in some of the things that are going on. So it's going to be a slow process, but in the end, you will start to see those alpha dogs emerge that are nudging people along, that are commanding respect, that are getting guys to do the right things. And Kirby Smart knows the blueprint to kind of let those things play itself out. You can't go in as a coach and pick a guy, but you can allow a guy the opportunity to establish himself, and I think that's what George is looking for here.
So I'm probably dumb for not realizing this, but that's why the coaches named the permanent captains at the end of the season, I guess. I never really knew why that tradition was always to announce the permanent captain when the year was over, but I think you just explained that in a way that should have maybe been obvious to everybody else, but not obvious to me. It's because of the fact that these guys are earning that spot all across the season, and that I love the way you said this. You don't want to absolve anyone from the responsibility of also having the opportunity to lead. That's a pretty interesting description, Mike, and I probably should have realized that before now.
Yeah, it's tough because what you have here, and it's not, you know, it's not like an NFL team where, you know, the leaders are established and people are inside of the program for 10 years. Listen, you're going to have a guy like Jake Fromm that's going to be on a leadership council next year as a true sophomore, as a 19, 20-year-old, whatever he's going to be. And you don't want to allow those guys to take a step back. You don't want anybody to step into the background. You want those guys to say, hey, you know what, this is my opportunity too. I can step in front of this team and lead this team through certain drills. So you're right. You don't want to take that responsibility off anyone's shoulders. You don't want to have anybody that doesn't think it's their right to say something because they are not a captain. So that's exactly right. That's why they wait till the end of the year.
I had a chance to talk to Nick Chubb, Sonny Michel, a little bit in the press conference room on Monday night, and I think the thing that's really interesting about both those guys is that, you know, one way or another, it does look like Georgia is going to put together a pretty impressive run here. At least the building blocks are in place to be able to do that. And for Chubb and Michel, they're only kind of a part of the beginning of it. Who knows where it ends? And I think you would agree with me that, you know, they seem to appreciate that part of their legacy, right? I mean, I know Sonny Michel pretty much explicitly said that it's kind of nice to think that what happens here in the future, that he sort of played a role in handing that baton off to somebody else. And obviously for Georgia fans, they would have loved to seen those two guys wearing the championship ring. But, Mike, I think for the people that watch and listen to my show every single day, I think they'll all appreciate that if Georgia ever does get there, you'll have to look back and say, hey, Michel, Chubb, Carter, a lot of those guys played a role in this. And as a former player yourself, I think you probably appreciate that same thing from your time in Alabama, that you actually did win the championship, but a lot more championships came after you, and maybe none of that happens if you guys didn't buy into that process as quickly as you did, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people would say, you know, I'd rather have the rings. I'd rather come after and pile up, you know, a couple rings in a 3-year period or 4-year period. But I do wear it as a badge of honor. I wear it as a badge of honor for the guys that came before me that didn't get the ring, the guys that I looked up to inside the program, guys like John Parker Wilson and Antoine Caldwell there at Alabama. I looked up to guys like that, and they didn't get a ring, and they did establish a new normal of greatness at Alabama. And so I do look back at opportunities those guys didn't get. I'm very thankful for the ones I did get. And listen, when I go back to Tuscaloosa, when I'm part of that facility, when I get to see some of the people that are still inside of that program that knew me as a player, that knew me back then, they wear it with a badge of pride too. They approach you in the same way. They will tell you that, you know what, we didn't have a nutritionist when I was at Alabama. We didn't have a new, $30 million weight room with a $500,000 sound system. We did the best with what we had, and we went to Alabama because we loved Alabama, not because, we were chasing championships or we were chasing to be a first-round pick. We went to Alabama because that's where we wanted to be and established a new norm there. So you wear it as a badge of pride. I know those guys will wear it as a badge of pride at Georgia, and they should. I think everybody that has a chance to talk to them will remember them as you know, part of that group that did turn that program around.
Couple quick final thoughts from me, if you don't mind. I'm genuinely curious about this. What do you think happens between Tua Tagovailoa and Jalen Hurts now? Obviously, I think that Coach Saban wants Jalen Hurts to stay a part of the program. If Hurts were to make a decision to leave, I think that leaves Alabama suddenly pretty thin at the quarterback spot. How do you think this next few months plays out in terms of what is one of the grandest quarterback controversies we've ever seen?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to look at. Now, you know, Georgia's going to have their own kind of ordeal going on at quarterback position, too, for the next couple of years. I find it to be a head-scratcher. I'm not sure how they're going to, you know, keep this quarterback room intact. Listen, Alabama, like you mentioned, if Jalen or Tua did leave this offseason, they are in a bad position next year in terms of quarterback. You have a guy like Mac Jones that all of a sudden becomes the backup quarterback. He's a true freshman this year. He redshirted. There's nobody else really in that room. I mean, there's nobody else really to point to in terms of what you'd want to do offensively if one of those quarterbacks got injured. So I think that Nick Saban will do his best to point to, you know, the fact that this is a, you know, this is going to be a competition in the spring. You know, we're going to see who guy, you know, what guy really plays better. They're going to allow Jalen Hurts the opportunity to win his job back. And I think if Nick Saban can, then he'll try to extend that into training camp all the way into the fall. I don't know if he'll be able to do that. I think if I'm Jalen Hurts and I start to see the writing on the wall and I still want to play quarterback in NCAA, you know, you do look at a place like FAU and a place like Lane Kiffin or some of the opportunities, you know, maybe back in Texas that you could, you know, step into a program and still be a quarterback, still be a leader. I'm not sure. I think that Nick Saban will do his best job to try to keep both guys on campus. But in the end, those guys are going to do what's best for them. And I don't know if Jalen right now staying around the program is what's best.
Let me squeeze in a quick final question. Bruce Arians says that the job that Nick Saban covets is the New York Giants job. I don't know how he knows that. I don't know why the Giants job is more special than other NFL jobs. This seems to happen every offseason. Do you take any part of this seriously, that Nick Saban might reconsider the NFL after sort of turning down a lot of other jobs seemingly over the last few years?
You know, I give it about a 20% chance, and that's probably higher than a lot of people give it that are wearing crimson, you know, this week. But I think that at some point, Nick Saban, I just don't believe in a lot of ways that he finishes his coaching career at Alabama. I think that he's one of those guys that wants to be great. I think he starts feeling antsy at some point. And when he does leave that Alabama program, I will clap. I will give a standing ovation, and I will thank him for everything he's done because it's been an incredible run. But I just don't believe it's the New York Giants. I think there's been a little bit of news leaked earlier today that Matt Patricia might be the head coach up there. So, okay. And the fact that it comes from Bruce Arians is a little bit of a head-scratcher. So I think that at some point I would not be shocked. If in the next 5 years, if Nick Saban jumped to the NFL, it would not shock me. I just don't think now is the time, and I don't think New York's the place that Nick Saban really wants to be.
Mike, always good to have you. We'll look forward to seeing you on SEC Country Live later on this afternoon. We appreciate your time, and I hope you have a great day.
All right, thanks, Brandon.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So at the end of our discussion there, we're talking about those rumors that Nick Saban might take an NFL job and Bruce Arians, the former NFL coach, how he would, you know, kind of know that and, you know, kind of what his thoughts are on that. And, you know, as we start our SEC through here, I think I speak for a lot of Georgia fans when I say, or at least maybe I don't, but my perspective on this is I don't want Saban to leave. I want Georgia to have more of these kinds of games against him. And listen, I'd take a championship for Georgia however it came, but there is a part of me that doesn't want this budding rivalry between Alabama and Georgia to go anywhere as of yet. And for because you know, Alabama fans think they're going to just keep right on rolling with a replacement for Nick Saban. You know, history would show that's a little easier said than done. I think Alabama would take a step back without Nick Saban. I don't think Dabo Swinney's coming to Alabama at this point in time, although maybe he might. But even if Swinney comes over, maintaining what Alabama's maintained is just not an easy thing to do. And for Georgia, yeah, you kind of like the idea of getting a chance to knock this guy off the perch, not have him sort of voluntarily remove himself from it. So this will be an interesting thing to watch. But when I think about future games for Georgia against Alabama, I sort of like the idea of Nick Saban being on the sideline over there. I like the extra challenge of trying to be what Nick Saban has been, with Nick Saban still trying to do it. You know, that there's something about, y'all know I like pro wrestling, the old Ric Flair phrase about to be the man, you have to beat the man. I like the idea of Georgia earning its spot at the top of the college football world by having beaten the man that's occupied that with Nick Saban. So that's kind of my thought on that. By the way, I will remind you, the Dog Nation Daily is brought to you in part by my friends at MyBookie. You know, there's a lot of NFL playoff action coming up this weekend, which means opportunities to get money line bets down, to get over-under bets down, straight point spread bets. You can do a lot of that. You can really do it all at the place where the pros play, at MyBookie. You guys know I like MyBookie, and the reason why I like it is because they are known for their fast, no-hassle payout when you win. They do it in just two business days. And right now, they've got an even better offer for Dog Nation Daily listeners and viewers. Your first deposit can be matched up to 100%, but you've got to use the promo code DOGNATION at the website mybookie.ag. It's as simple as this. You play, you win, you get paid. It does not get any easier or simpler than that. You just got to go to mybookie.ag, use the promo code DOGNATION, and you get your first deposit matched up to 100%. So some of y'all wanted me to ask Mike Johnson about the officiating the college football playoff national championship game. It has been a big topic here. What we announced about 48 hours removed from the game, and folks continuing to talk about it. I saw the SB Nation piece where they really kind of gave you a lot of examples of calls missed that benefited Alabama, that hurt Georgia. The most recent one that I've seen that I didn't really know about on Monday. Sometimes when you're at the game, some of this kind of stuff goes in one ear and out the other. You don't really notice it, but looks like Alabama was a false start on its game-tying touchdown to go along with the, you know, unnecessary roughness on Jake Fromm, the non-phantom offsides call on Georgia on what would have been a block punt, kind of on and on you can go about what looked to be a collection of missed calls that all seemed to help Alabama, seemed to hurt Georgia. You know, the tact I try to take with this kind of stuff on Dog Nation Daily is to try not to make officiating be a big storyline in any game, because for the most part, I think officiating is just as likely to help you as hurt you. Now, in this case, a lot of these calls do go in the way of Alabama. I don't believe there's any kind of, like, you know, conspiracy at play here. I don't believe that college football somehow wanted Alabama more than Georgia. I don't believe that. I mean, and I don't put it past college sports to kind of be about that kind of stuff from time to time. I mean, for instance, I was watching the Kentucky Texas A&M basketball game last night. Y'all probably weren't watching that, but I was watching at the end, and you know, A&M had a chance at the end with I guess would have been a game time basket. Kentucky just mauled the guy, prevented him from catching the ball. Ball sails out of bounds. Game over. And in my mind, I'm watching that, and I'm thinking, there's no way they're making that call against Kentucky at the end of the game at Rupp Arena. It's not that the officials are corrupt. I just think that that's just a really tough call to have the guts to make in that spot right there. Officials are human nature. We see all kinds of numbers that home teams get the benefit of calls. I think teams like Kentucky, blue blood teams in basketball, are going to get the benefit over other teams as well. It's kind of a perfect storm working against the Aggies. Could Georgia have had some of that going on in the national championship game? I think that's probably less likely. I think it's probably just bad, stupid luck that Georgia got these bad calls that went against them on Monday. Do I believe that there's much of a chance of that many calls going against Alabama? At that point in time, I think the human nature of the officials probably prevails, and they realize who they're making these calls against. It's Nick Saban. Does Georgia have that kind of reputation built up? Maybe not as of yet. But anyway, a lot of Georgia fans still very much upset. When you go back and watch these replays, you kind of understand where that comes from. A lot of these things are pretty irritating, but for me personally, I don't believe it's helpful to kind of make that be a part of the storyline for why Georgia lost the game. I think the game was still won and lost based on the decisions that Georgia made, the actions that Georgia took, but there's no doubt that some of those officiating calls give you a lot of reason to be irritated. By the way, real quick final SEC through story. Kind of interesting to see in a lot of these other way too early top 25s, some sort of new entrants from the SEC in some of these top 25 lists, teams like Mississippi State, South Carolina, Texas A&M, all mentioned as possible top 25 teams. And in South Carolina's case, they've been listed in every one of these way too early top 25s that I've seen. So you could have some new faces in the SEC making a little bit of noise next season. We'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, I want to transition back to something that we actually talked about during the video-only portion of our show yesterday. It was coming out just around this time that the Seattle Times had a report that barring a last-minute change of mind or change of heart, Jacob Eason was likely expected to transfer to Washington. This is not necessarily a surprise. Seattle Times is a respected news organization. I'm going to take them seriously on this, even though they don't write flatly say that Eason's definitely coming to Washington. This always seemed like one of the landing spots for him. I had a chance to catch up with Eason last week before the Rose Bowl, and I asked him at the time about any kind of timeline for making a decision like this, about a decision to transfer. Here's what Eason said about that before the Oklahoma game.
I don't really have a timeline. I'm just focused on beating Oklahoma and playing in the Rose Bowl. So, I'm focused on this week, and then all that will come sometime. I'm not sure.
This is one of those moments where Eason probably wasn't telling the truth, but telling a little white lie was probably the right thing to do. He didn't want to put the focus on himself away from Georgia going against Oklahoma or against Alabama. He kind of deferred comment for the most part on this after Monday night's game as well. But obviously, he's busy working behind the scenes on this. I think he deserves a lot of credit for not making it more of a distraction, and I think he has a great chance of succeeding at his next destination if he truly does transfer away from Georgia. One of the reasons I think that might happen is because having a chance to watch the game of football for a year, almost like a redshirt season after the fact for him, that may make him a better quarterback. And based on our interview last week, it sounds like Eason might agree.
You know, I've seen things that, you're sitting on the sideline, you see different things that you don't see really when you're playing. You know, you can kind of see the whole picture rather than focusing on your play and looking at a couple key defenders. So I think that's a different, thing that not a lot of people get to see. So, yeah, I'm glad the experience has happened, and I'm glad, I got to learn from it.
And I think he has learned from it, and I think that his presence on the Georgia team this season, even without playing a lot, has probably made Georgia better. In particular, I think it's made Jake Fromm better. I think that Fromm does have probably an innate understanding of playbooks and just overall feel for the game, vision on the field that maybe Eason doesn't quite possess right now. But Eason also had a year's worth of experience. And from that, you do learn some things. And it sounds like Eason, during his year of watching, has tried to give some of that wisdom over to Jake Fromm. Here's what Eason said about that in our interview last week.
Yeah, I hope so. I understand, playing as a freshman is completely different than high school. I played last year, and it was a big experience for me, lots of big moments and lots of highs and lows. So, any way I can help him out, to get through those things and have a steady, steady mind through the next game, I'm going to do that. And I had Grayson as my mentor. He was a little bit older. He helped me out through the thing. I'm trying to do what Grayson did for me to Jake, so it's definitely different for me, but I'm glad I can be there for him in any way I can help.
You can check out the full interview I did with Georgia quarterback Jacob Eason on the Dog Nation Facebook page. If you want to go back to the video section from last week before the Oklahoma game, good stuff there from Jacob Eason. And the bottom line for me on this entire Eason discussion is I've actually been pretty pleased with what I've seen from Georgia fans on the Eason front. Almost universally in our comment section, you hear Georgia fans appreciative of Eason. They call him a DGD and things like that. And I think that that's the right tone to take with Eason. I think that Jacob Eason has done Georgia a bit of a favor, dealing with some circumstances that are just frankly unpleasant. To go from being the starting quarterback to a guy really not playing at all, that's a bad situation for Eason. There's no doubt about that. And yet Eason has never publicly shown any kind of disappointment with that. He's been a good teammate, and maybe in another uniform he becomes a good quarterback again. But for this year for Georgia, he was a good teammate, and that was the best way he could help the Dogs. And I think Georgia fans should be glad that's what he's done. All right, as we wrap up here today here on Dog Nation Daily, I will say once again, really excited about the build-up towards National Signing Day in February. I think it's going to be a lot of fun here on this show. As we talked about before, names like Quay Walker, Tyson Campbell, maybe Isaac Taylor Stewart, maybe Tommy Bush. These are interesting names still out there for Georgia, and a really good way for Dog fans to feel even better about the build-up towards the 2018 season this upcoming fall. With that said, we'll also be back in October in Jacksonville for the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. And here on Dog Nation Daily, we believe that a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater first and foremost. Some of you were not with us when this Gator hater countdown started. We started it well over a year ago, going into our second year of doing it now. The reason why is because we thought that the Georgia-Florida rivalry needed to change. We thought that Georgia needed to reassert itself in this rivalry. That happened in 2017. We think it happens again in 2018. 290 days from right now, it's our Gator Hater Countdown. We'll see you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily.